Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. I have with me a returning guest from last week, Kristen Gieselin. And Kristen, for those of you who did not hear last week's show, she is a consultant. She is also an intuitive and a mindfulness mentor. She has her BA in psychology and her MS in human resource development. She's certified in Theta Healing, Voyager Tarot, Prep Relationship Education, and Workforce Development. She has assisted thousands of individuals in enhancing the quality of their life during her 30-plus year career. You must have started when you were five, right?
Yeah, that's right.
She is available for personal or business consultations, mentoring, custom workshops, and presentations. And we're going to be talking about relationships again as we're moving toward Valentine's Day. So welcome back, Kristen.
Well, thank you for inviting me to come back again, Lucy. We've been having a lot of fun with our conversation, so I'm looking forward to see what spirit injects into the mix today.
I am sure it'll inject a number of different things, actually. All right, so we're going to start with principles rather than personalities in this first half hour. And I'm going to ask the question about why are guidelines to the way we interact with others helpful? Why do we need guidelines?
Well, you know, this is really kind of it's a basic thing, but I feel that people struggle with this. And we are innately awakened. Our true nature is to be awakened. We are our actual, what we come here with is already perfect. However, because of what happens in our soul journey and in our families of origin, etc., and as we live our lives, we can lose connection with how our thoughts, feelings, and actions actually link to everyone else's. And our negative emotions can influence our decision-making in the way we deal with other people.
So if we don't understand where those negative emotions are coming from, we're kind of in trouble sometimes.
Right. And because we're not in every moment 100% awakened, although we are born with an awakened, our Buddha nature is there, we need guidelines so that we do better in our interactions. And every wisdom tradition has guidelines. I've heard the Ten Commandments spoken of in acute presentation as the Ten Suggestions. Mm-hmm. So that it's not that if we don't follow these guidelines, we're going to hell. That's not the idea at all. The idea is that we are trying to do something in our connection with other people and in connecting with ourselves and our higher self that requires skill and it requires clarity. So let's just say, for instance, there's part of our consciousness that is not completely awakened in any moment. And I'm sure everyone knows that there are different parts of your day where you might feel more or less awake. When we aren't perceiving reality with clarity, we need these suggestions or commandments, or in Buddhism, the 10 precepts, or in the 12-step programs, the 12 steps, to help us guide our decision-making in how we interact with other people.
Right. So if you didn't have a little bit of a guideline, I'm thinking back to children. You know, when they're babies, you kind of let them explore within a safe environment because the idea is that they're going to be growing those brain cells through their explorations. And then as we get a little bit older, we have a few more guidelines for them. You know, like, no, you're not going to throw your milk across the room just to see how far you can throw it. And when they learn how to ride a bicycle, you know, there's guidelines. And when they go off to school, there are more guidelines. I think the difficulty sometimes is in the interpretation of the guidelines, that some people interpret them much more strictly than others. And when you have a very strict interpretation, that can lead to problems because you're looking at, okay, this is good and this isn't good. You know, this is the right way to do it. This is the wrong way to do it. So what do you want to say about that?
Well, yes. It said that there, it's also, I've heard it said that the difference between right and wrong is the sickness of the mind. So there's a difference between having an intention that's not a great intention, mm-hmm. or having a good intention and not being particularly skillful. And, you know, I kind of operate with the premise that people, there is an element in people that is awake, okay? And there may be an element in people that is still a little cloudy.
Sleeping,
yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. So we want to appeal to the part of their being that is awake, but not with, you know, we're not trying to judge ourselves or judge other people. We're trying to create, like, almost like what you were talking about with little children, a safe container for exploring mm-hmm. the world,
right,
and learning,
right.
You know, that if we can create an environment where there's a certain amount of safety and security for everyone, then we can all learn together. But if we violate each other's sort of unalienable rights, which pretty much when you look across all of the wisdom traditions, there's certain guidelines that are fairly well agreed upon, mm-hmm. then we don't have a safe container for learning.
Right. And right now, obviously, we have a very unsafe container for a lot of people.
Yeah, unfortunately, it feels that way. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think a lot of people, though, are starting to take a stand and mm-hmm. say, I will not participate
right.
in creating more and more acrimony and more worry and fear.
Right.
That the real challenge is, was it Roosevelt said, you know, the only thing to fear is fear itself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that really gets down to the crux of things with relationships. Mm-hmm. Is when we come from a place of fear, mm-hmm. The chances of getting the desired results of the whole point of connection, if you go with the nonviolent communication Rosenberg's theory,
right.
is that we're here to help each other make life more wonderful.
Right.
And so we have to try to find ways to embrace whatever it is within ourselves that needs quelling, healing, safety, security, so that we can interact from that place with other people.
So it's entirely possible that a lot of what's been going on in the last, let's say, 10 years is coming about, maybe, so that we can address more of those fears on a universal level.
It could be. I mean, I know, I have to say, I have surrounded myself with a lot of other people who are intuitives, healers, on a spiritual path. So sometimes I'm not even exactly sure what's happening with people who are not in that universe. But,
right.
But I will say, you know, I do watch the news, and it feels like, you know, the planet is sort of getting smaller because we have more and more people living on the planet. And we have the, you know, internet, so people can really kind of tune into what's happening in other places
more quickly. You literally carry the internet with you and with your phone.
Exactly.
And so we're never without communication if we so desire it. And how many people do you see, because I see a lot, that go to their phone to check to see where are we in the world at this moment in time, which I'm not sure is a healthy thing to do.
Right. And checking all the time kind of puts the locus of control on the outside
rather than on the inside.
Exactly. And in terms of the responsibility that we have, you know, for generating healing and positive energy, is only inside our own mind, body, spirit you know, what we do, what we say, what mm-hmm. we think. That's it. That's the only thing we're actually 100% responsible for.
Right.
So sometimes when we're checking, doing all that external checking, instead of monitoring what's going on with us
right.
and what we can do and what we can influence, we get caught up in monitoring what's going on elsewhere.
And how fear-wise that's going to influence us. So then you're looking at the very thing that you don't want.
Yeah, focusing on what you don't want is never a good idea.
No.
That doesn't work out now. Because what we focus on expands.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Right. Where vibrationally it does.
Yeah, where your focus goes, your energy flows.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely better to hold, focus on what you see working and what you see, what you appreciate about what's going on. But also don't be, you can look at things that you find unpleasant or undesirable without creating a negative energy toward it. And, you know, it's okay to understand that there are challenges and issues worldwide, but it's the energy that we bring to those challenges and issues that mm-hmm. we are responsible for and that can actually make a difference in how those circumstances play out.
Right.
So we don't necessarily, it's not healthy to ignore negative things that happen in the world and say, oh, cancel, cancel. Okay, yes, we'd like to cancel all of the causes that cause that, but we still may have an opportunity to influence positive outcomes if we say, oh, look, you know, it's really cold in Detroit. How about let's see if we can get them to open up the gyms and get some people inside the gymnasiums.
Right.
You know, we're not going to say, oh, it's really cold. I don't want to look at that. I don't want to deal with the fact that people are suffering in the streets because it's too cold.
Right.
We want to say, oh, I'm so sorry they're suffering. I love them. Let's see if we can get them inside. What could we do? Without being emotionally upset about it.
Right.
That's the thing. And people who work in law, who work in human services, who work as healers, you learn that you can only be effective if you maintain a certain amount of calm and clarity as you act in the world to, you know, affect the positive difference that you want to make.
Right. I was just thinking, I think it was in Chicago that they were running the buses. So that people who were afraid they would lose all of their possessions, you know, they couldn't take their possessions into a library or into a Y that maybe was open or something. They had these buses that were continually running with their possessions with them so that they didn't have to be afraid of leaving them. And I thought that was, you know, very
creative
on their part, you know, kind of with that altruistic thought process that said, I see where you're coming from, rather than, no, you need to leave your possessions and be safe. You know, they were
trying to accommodate the reality of those people instead of making
right.
those people conform to what was going to be convenient for the
for
helper.
Them.
Yeah. And that's the true, that's the skillful helper.
Right.
That, you know, when we do what you and I would refer to as client-centered helping.
Exactly.
You know, it's where, what's going to work for that person, what's
right.
going to work for that situation.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty, it's pretty neat that they came up with that.
Do you want to talk maybe a little bit about a combination of the 10, precepts and maybe how that relates also to the 12-step program that people are on? They're kind of linked in some respects.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And in fact, there's a book out there called Buddhism and the 12 Steps.
Oh, cool.
And it was about a man, and I'm sorry I didn't bring this with me today, but it's about a man who was meditating first. He first became a meditator, and then he realized that his addiction wasn't working for him. So it's usually you would think it might go the other way, but it didn't in the case of this man. But it took some time. It took some investment. But we were sort of talking about this morning, when you can get to that place of centeredness inside yourself, you might be better able to regulate because you're finding that centered place in a healthy way.
Right.
You don't have to use either a food or substance
right.
to get to that calm, centered place.
Right.
Yeah. So there's multiple reasons. You know, this is back to the protocol. I'd like to just read the way I practice the 10 precepts. The first ones are about the body, and it says to give up killing and protect the lives of sentient beings, to give up taking that which is not given and practice charity, to give up sexual misconduct and practice the moral precepts. So we are living at, you know, three levels, the mental, the physical, and the spiritual. And these guidelines kind of go with those different levels. And in terms of, you know, the precepts of the body, you know, you can take these at different levels according to, you know, how, like your level of what we would call ordination. You know, if you're a lay person, if you're a monk or you're a nun, you're going to carry these levels at different, you know, in different ways. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, there are some people, many people who have decided they just want to be vegetarian, mm-hmm. because they don't even want to participate in any way, shape, or form of, you know, of killing animals. I'm personally not a vegetarian. I find it challenging to be really healthy when I just eat plants. I know it works great for some people, mm-hmm. but I do limit it. And my teacher has said to me, please don't eat beef, because beef is not good for the planet. It just costs a lot of energy on the planet to eat beef. Mm-hmm. So I think all of these, you have to kind of gauge what level is appropriate for you and your personal circumstances. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, giving up killing, you know, all, you know, we're not going to, you know, of course we're not going to kill human beings, but there's a lot of killing that can happen on a very subtle level. You know, I realized even discouraging people, if they have motivation or energy or excitement towards something and I'm don't really respond very much, that's a way of killing.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of have to look and reflect and see, you know, where are you relative to these different things? You know, giving up that which is not given in practice charity, you know, sometimes you wonder when something happens, you know, clearly you're not going to steal things. That's a clear guideline. But then sometimes something might come to you unexpectedly and you have to assess, do I feel that this is something that I should return? Did I find, you know, $10 in the parking lot? You know, do I feel inclined to give this back to the, you know, to the store environment? So those are the kinds of things that you kind of have to reflect on and say, what is right in this moment? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's, you know, that's not so black and white for people at certain times. So I feel like I try to err on the side of caution as much as possible, because I do believe there are karmic effects of how we handle these energy things. So,
well, and I'm also thinking again, you know, if you're with a younger child, and I'm thinking of the $10 at that point,
right?
You know, what you do at that moment will influence what they then store in their memory bank,
right,
of how that was handled.
Right.
So very possibly, if you didn't know whose it was, you could pay it forward by maybe being at, you know, a McDonald's or someplace and buying someone who obviously looks like they're in need of a sandwich or something to drink, you know, using that money for them. So it teaches, it's teaching in the moment, so to speak.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that you could do. I know my mother actually lost a diamond in a large auditorium. And a little girl who was on a field trip found it and turned it in to the authorities, you know, to the people, the management in that environment. And the diamond ended up coming back to my mom.
That's awesome.
And so my mom purchased a necklace and gave it to her, a gold necklace, to say thank you, because mm-hmm. she wanted to reward that behavior.
Right, yeah. Right.
So it was definitely really sweet that the little girl didn't just squirrel it away and take it home with her. Yeah,
right.
I'm sure,
yeah,
it was
pretty stone.
Pretty exciting to find a diamond, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the third one, giving up sexual misconduct and practicing moral precepts. Well, you know, if you're a monk or a nun, that's very different than if you're a householder.
Mm-hmm.
So with the householder, it's the right time, right place, right person. And, you know, that's a little bit higher standard maybe than it's okay to have sex with the person that you're married to. Well, sometimes it's not. Sometimes, you know, that person may not be available, or they may not be interested, or it's not the right place, you know, to be considerate of everybody's, you know, sensibilities. So, you know, that's a little bit different way of looking at it. So that's what I try to do. And then we have four of the voice, giving up telling lies and speaking the truth, giving up slanderous speech and reconcile those who oppose each other, giving up harsh words and to speak gently, to give up idle talk and recite prayers. Now, I honestly will tell you, this starts to get a little more challenging. I consider myself a pretty honest person. I really, since childhood, probably do not tell lies. However, the slanderous speech and reconcile those who oppose each other, I'm sure there's times when I complain about other people. And so that's a question I could improve on that. Mm-hmm. Giving up using harsh words and speaking gently. Again, that's something that, you know, there's a moment when you're stressed out and you might say something to somebody without much gentleness.
Right.
And to give up idle talk and recite prayers. Well, we love to talk as Americans. We talk all the time. So, you know, figuring out what you're doing with your voice faculty energy, mm-hmm. you know, you have to be discerning and decide, you know, because our voices are creative, we have to decide, you know, what are we doing with that?
Have you ever been around somebody who, you know, because I look at modulation in voice.
Right.
And there are some people that actually are very grating on my eardrums because their voice is extremely high-pitched.
Right.
Or it has that shrill quality to it.
Right.
And those are the times when mindfulness does come in, because I literally have to get myself into that flow of breathing through it and beginning to go to that place that is just a happier place to be. So I know that sometimes it's referred to as having that type of sound that's like the chalk on the chalkboard.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that people kind of deal with.
Right, and I have been in trouble at times in my life for my tone of voice. Mm-hmm. So I feel like tone kind of falls into the harsh words. Mm-hmm. You could be saying mm-hmm. something, but if you don't say it with the right tone of voice, then it could be a trouble.
Right.
And then, you know, for me, I do like to try to spend a certain amount of time saying prayers, but I absolutely, you know, the ratio of prayers to idle talk is sort of talk that doesn't necessarily amount to a lot. Right. We do, you know, the kind of conversation that we're having right now, I feel is useful. We're trying to share whatever insight or understanding we have and support other people. That's great talk. Talk about the community, you know, what do we need to do to, you know, help, you know, like the other people in these cold climates right now. You know, I'm sure there was a lot of conversation to get that job done.
Right.
You know, that's the kind of conversation we really want to support, you know, when we're thinking about how do we solve our challenges as a global family. That's good talk. And then there's three of the mind: to give up covetousness and practice generosity, to give up ill will and contemplate on benevolence, to give up contrary views and hold the purest doctrinal view in mind. So, you know, sometimes in our lives, especially I think with Madison Avenue driving so much of what comes into us, it can be easy to say, oh, I wish I had this or I wish I had that mm-hmm. in my life. Or, you know, coveting, and I think in the Ten Commandments, you know, you're not really supposed to be coveting. Do not covet your neighbor's wife.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's like a form of jealousy almost. You know, oh, they have this and I wish I had it and I don't have it. Those are not mentally healthy places to go. And in some ways, it basically minimizes what you do have. It takes your focus away from yourself. It takes your focus away from gratitude and from recognizing the abundance that is yours when you focus on what other people have that you might not have.
Well, one of the things for people who maybe caught the show with Tess a few weeks ago is her comment that we have everything. You know, we don't recognize that we have everything, but we truly do have everything right now available to us. And she talked about Sigmund Freud, you know, and that whole concept of the ego, and the ego kind of looking at you have what I want, therefore I'm going to take it. But if you can get yourself into the superego and kind of realize that no, it is all there for you, you just have to change your way of looking at things. So, you know, certainly that sort of fits as well, just understanding that, you know, if this is a lifetime of experiencing, how to go from that sense of lack to that sense of having everything that we want in our life, it's a journey. It's a journey of thought processes that take you from the sensation of not having to the sensation of well-being.
Right. And that has so much to do with your beliefs, mm-hmm. you know, about the universe. And here's where I can say thank you very much to New Thought Christianity for the concepts around that the universe is abundant and that everything that we need is contained here. And so I feel really lucky that I got those in there early to get that program. But a lot of people don't have that program. You know, they have other programs that have to do with lack and suffering and a lot of things that are not so pleasant. So if you're coming from that kind of a position, then of course practicing not wanting what others have is not going to be as easy.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, and it's sort of interesting how a baby can be born into that environment of the parents or grandparents or extended family having that belief system, but making the decision that that's not what I'm going to accept. I'm not going to be part of that. I'm going to pull myself out and move forward. And those are the ones that are like the Dalai Lama or, you know, are Nobel Peace Prize winners, you know, at whatever age, because they've recognized that there is a choice.
Right. There's something among in certain people, or they just get to a certain point and they're like, I'm just not going to have it like this.
Mm-hmm.
And they start changing their thinking and they do all the things that it takes to shift their reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, practicing generosity. You know, that's just kind of, you know, very basic to, you know, all of the wisdom traditions. And because as we, you know, as we give, we receive.
Right.
And it also is a constant acknowledgement, I think, of that it is an abundant universe.
Mm-hmm.
That as we release and give to others and support others with our spirit, that energy flows back to us. And it's multiplied. It's not even coming back. As it is, it comes back in a multiplied form.
Right.
So it's very wonderful to do that. And then in here it talks about giving up ill will. And, you know, it's easy when you get into disappointing situations with people for resentments or angers, you know, to get cultivated or get stuck in. And that really does not serve anybody. In
right.
fact, of course, it hurts us more than it hurts the other people, because then our sense of connection to spirit gets smaller and smaller. And contemplating on benevolence, you know, kindness, you know, to think about and reflect on how can we be kind to others? How can we be kind to ourselves?
Right.
You know, all of the relationship guidelines apply to ourselves as much as they apply to others. If we can apply it with ourselves, then we're much more likely to apply it with other people.
You know, one of the things that you're well aware of, but there are many, many different kinds of addictions. And most people think of addictions as primarily smoking, alcohol, drugs, maybe gambling. But there are many other kinds. And when you talk about being kind to yourself, there is an addiction that's not very well known, where it is an addiction to being of service to others. A lot of people have volunteered their lives away to the degree that they're not around their families very much, because maybe there are triggers, emotional triggers in the family. And so they go out and they do all these good deeds out in the community, and they're rewarded because the community makes them man of the year, woman of the year, you know. But when you really and truly look at their lives, it is an addiction, and it's an addiction to keep them away from who they believe they are. So they go out and they do these amazing things only because they're afraid of looking in the mirror at who they truly are. And I have always found that so fascinating, because we don't talk about those kind of addictions, and yet they're just as damaging to the self or to the family.
Sure, because that sounds like it's something that creates an imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
And someone is getting the short end of that stick.
Right.
You know, clearly the family is not getting the loving kindness. You
right.
know, they're not getting the consideration or benevolence.
Right.
So, or even the person themselves. You know, they may be neglecting themselves. They may not
mm-hmm.
be taking good care of their own physical health.
Right.
They may not be, you know, enjoying, actually enjoying what they're doing.
Right.
You know, so yeah. it takes layers. There's layers and layers and layers.
So true.
Of the relationship thing. And of course, it starts with ourselves and our relationship with our higher power.
Right.
And then it talks here about giving up contrary views and holding the purest doctrine of you. What does that mean? That's speaking to, you know, like there are some people, I think, currently that believe that karma is over, you know, that cause and effect is no longer active because we've transcended that level or whatever.
Probably not.
I think there might be some people who have, but I think most of us are still in a frequency most of the time where our causes, the kind of causes that we engage in, still have effects. Mm-hmm. So it's always better to operate, I think, from a realm of, you know, better to be safe than sorry, in terms of, you know, how strictly I interpret guidelines for myself. I'd rather do that with a lot of carefulness, because I'm really not looking for big karmic whacks in my life anymore at this point. You know, I want what's coming back to me, quite honestly, to be gentle. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm trying my best to be gentle.
So that returns to you.
Exactly. Right. Absolutely. You know, ease and grace is right. What I'm looking for.
Right.
And so, you know, it doesn't mean that I want to sacrifice things that are important to me personally, in my life, but it does mean I want to be careful about how things that I do, say, think affect the people around me in my small circle, you know, my family, my roommate, my, you know, professional colleagues, and as the circle goes out more and more, you know, what I post on the internet, you know, what I say when I'm speaking now, I'm trying the best I can to be considerate of what those, you know, how that's going to affect people's ears. You know, how might that affect how the choices that they make? So.
Right. You and I talked a little bit before the show started, and I wanted to bring this up, and that is babies that are in utero still. We don't think that much. I mean, we talk about, you know, soothing music is good for them, and eating the right foods and getting sufficient sleep, and all of that helps the baby grow and mature and move towards being born. But I don't think there is a lot that is said about stress for the mother. And so something that I actually just recently learned was that when the baby is in utero, if there is a lot of conflict in the mother's life, you know, arguments, things of that nature, that the baby actually not only is in a fetal position, but actually contracts a little bit more to try to get away from that vibrational stress that it's feeling. So it's feeling it on an external and an internal level. And a lot of people don't understand the vibrational frequencies that we live inside of. We're in a big biome out here, and we feel it all. You know, you could feel my energy this morning, just when I was setting you up with that device that we'll talk about in a little bit, but just my mere touching you brought that inner tranquility or whatever, you know, into you. And so if we as human beings watch that vibrational frequency, you know, with our voice, with our character, how we are gracious to others, how we can send peaceful energy to others. You know, it is that ripple effect to me. It's throwing the stone, except the stone is your graciousness, your peace, and then watching it have that ripple effect, because you never know who it's going to touch. So it could be somebody in the grocery store, it could be somebody in a meeting with you, it could be somebody that you're just walking down the street with. And I personally have noticed more and more over the past few years, there's something, and I don't exactly know what it is that others are seeing, but if I'm walking past somebody and I lock eyes with them, they smile. I just, it's the most fun thing that I do. And it's that sense of, you know, they're kind of receiving a little bit of a gift. And I think it's just my energy going out and locking eyes with them and giving it to them. And I don't have to say anything. You know, I'm just me doing it. So I don't know whether you notice the same thing or not, but it's a fun activity to do, and maybe some of you listening could actually do it. Try it at a restaurant. Try it, checking in line. I had this happen to me in coming back from Colorado, where I had missed my flight, and everybody was, panicking. And I literally stood there and looked at the lady, and I said, "I really need to get home." And I just had my eyes on her, and she said, "Don't move." And she actually gave me a ticket, and everybody else was not getting a ticket. So I know it works, and so maybe if we all practiced it a little bit, and what can we give, to somebody else vibrationally?
Oh, yeah. I think that happens spontaneously. I actually met somebody, and I know this happens for people. I met somebody in a store the other day. And when we got near each other, our energy just started. It's like we both had positive energy, and we started talking. Uh-huh. And as it turned out, she had intuitive gifts. And we just, we couldn't stop talking to each other. It was like we were having a party, in the purse aisle in the store. And, yeah.
Didn't other people kind of look at you?
Well, we were kind of off by ourselves.
Oh, really? Okay.
But we were definitely in a positive energy bubble. There is no doubt at all that we were in a positive energy bubble. Yeah. And it felt like a divine appointment, that we were meant to have an interaction and connect during that time. And she was in a group of people. Her immediate family were still a little not sure about her intuitive gifts, but she was sure. Mm-hmm. And I think it was fun for her just to talk to somebody who also, had intuitive abilities.
Well, and could support her.
Yeah, and could support her, exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I think what you're talking about, when you look in someone's eyes, mm-hmm. there's something very powerful about that. You have acknowledged them as a human being.
Right, I see you.
Yes, I see you. And I respect you. Mm-hmm. If you're looking in somebody's eyes with a clear heart, they see that you are respecting them. You're seeing mm-hmm. them and you're respecting them. You're acknowledging them.
Right.
And with everybody looking down into their cell phones these days, having that, yeah. that acknowledgement that I'm a human being and you're a human being and we're both here on the planet.
That is a big fear that I actually have. And I think we can, false evidence appearing real kind of thing. But
right.
nevertheless, when I see people in restaurants, walking, driving, they have isolated themselves instead of looking at the bigger world and understanding what's actually available to them out there. They are more and more isolating themselves into their phone. And that's kind of scary, just to think, okay, people, let's open your eyes and look around, not just down.
Right. Well, that everything that's coming through that feed is already reified. It's already condensed. It's
right.
already,
right.
sort of pre-sorted. So, yeah, so there isn't an openness to the moment that they
right.
might have a conversation with somebody that they wouldn't normally talk to,
exactly.
that they wouldn't have in their Facebook feed.
Right.
Yeah, that would open them up and expand them and give them a different point of view. Yeah,
exactly.
I think that having real conversations with real people in this world
right.
is very valuable. And it's not that that can't happen in the cyber world, but people have to more deliberately make it happen.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the things, I don't know how many people listening know about a little community outside of Orlando called Celebration. And more developments over the past, let's say, 10 years have done what Celebration recognized. And that's to put porches back on houses because people hung out on their front porches. And then they had neighbor conversations. And so we've lost that ability because we've become isolated in how we live. We drive, isolated. We're closed the front doors of our homes and we're isolated. And we listen to whatever is the interpretation of the news, whether it's on CNN or PBS or ABC or NBC. It's whoever we've kind of said, okay, I associate my beliefs with this network. And it just reinforces whatever those beliefs are, rather than opening them up to other possibilities that do exist. Do you want to maybe give everybody again, before the end of the show, how to get hold of you, and then we'll continue?
Sure. My name is Kristen Geeslin. I can be reached at Kristin Geeslin, KRISTIN, G like girl, EE, S like Sam, LIN2 at gmail.com, 727-678-3761. And my Facebook page is Kristin Geeslin, MS.
All right, so thank you for that. I think sometimes at the very end of the show, it's hard to get all of that information in.
Yeah, we're always trying to come up. We're talking excitedly still at the end of the
show. At the end of the show. All right, so I want to ask, the majority of adults, and I know next week on Valentine's Day, Tess is going to be talking about love and how the angels want us to love one another. But the majority of adults want an intimate partnership. But, you know, as you and I have said, they sometimes have this magical thinking or belief about how relationships stay healthy. So maybe you want to give a couple of tips about making sure that your relationship is a healthy relationship.
Well, yeah, I think at the beginning of relationships, a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of chemistry, there's a lot of spark. And how I got kind of clued into more things about relationships is I worked for a relationship education nonprofit for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And we were given a very generous grant to help people sort of upgrade the quality of their relationships. So it's something like, I think it's...
Flying first class.
Yeah, flying first class. Exactly. So 90, I think it's over 90% of people say they want to have an intimate partnership. Mm-hmm. However, there are not that many people that think about, well, I mean, you know you want to have one, but you're not exactly sure how to make that a quality relationship. And so that was really the mission of the program that I worked for, was to empower people with more skills and more understanding about what really did create positive long-term committed relationships.
You know, can I interrupt 1 second?
And sure.
I think this fits in, but, you know, that whole concept of we have 2 ears so that we listen twice as much as we speak. And as a professional therapist myself, I would often find that the opposite was happening. Both were speaking and nobody was listening.
Well, sure, because probably both of them had felt unheard for a long mm-hmm. time. And mm-hmm. so then that was sort of the reaction to that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So first of all, you know, I think there is something, I want to say that there is magic in relationships, but it's not the kind of like magical thinking. Like, oh, there's just one perfect guy, and I just have to find that person. And if I find that person, everything is going to be great.
I'll be happy ever after.
Exactly. And I think that pretty much that's an old school concept, and most people have grown out of that. But I still think there are some mythic sort of beliefs around relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good to check oneself to see what they are.
Right.
Or there could also be beliefs that just come from your own experience with whatever relationships you saw growing up or whatever. Mm-hmm. So just kind of having some consciousness about what programs you might have about relationships, I think is wise, as you enter into a relationship. And then it actually takes some skills. There's actual skills to keep your relationship healthy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might not have been born into a family where the skills were necessarily there, and you might not have ever learned those skills.
Right.
So it's not that if you're not exactly sure how to have strong, positive communication with another person that you can't learn. And there's tons of resources for that. But a relationship has to be maintained. It's not just, you know, a lot of people get very excited and focused about their wedding day, and people spend, you know, thousands of dollars. Like, right. I think the average wedding is something like $20,000.
I've heard that.
And that's a lot of money. But are they investing in any kind of coaching or counseling before they get married? Mm-hmm. Are they doing, you know, taking advantage of any of those services that might be available through their house of worship? Maybe yes, maybe no. So there's things that can be done that would provide some support for a stronger foundation. But people, because they do sort of get caught up in the magical thinking, don't always do the practical things that could help them build a foundation or sort of eliminate any kind of challenges before they actually even occur.
Right.
So it's not necessary. And I think part of why people don't take advantage is of some of those supports that might be available to them is that they almost feel like if they admit that they don't know how to do it perfectly, then that's not the right relationship. You know, it's sort of an all or nothing type of situation. And it really shouldn't be like that. It should be fine and it should be okay to say, okay, I really like this person and I think this could be an awesome match, but I don't necessarily know exactly how to handle all the different elements of what this is going to take to be successful.
Well, and one of the keys is honestly and truly learning how to communicate. When I was doing a lot of work with couples, and I always said the triangle is your shape that you should be looking at. And respect and trust are at the bottom of that triangle. So if you don't trust somebody, you're not going to communicate very openly with them. If you don't respect them, you're not going to communicate very openly with them. And so you have to build that part of the foundation, you know, in the couple relationship, because if you can't communicate because you don't have the respect and trust, the relationship is doomed to fail. You have to develop that. And for an awful lot of couples, it's about the sexual tension that they have. And so once the sex is there, you know, that's all they're looking at, be it male or female. But certainly, you know, your sexual compatibility is also going to be based on, do you trust them? And can you communicate that trust? Do you respect them?
Yep. And I would like to just throw out one of the resources that kind of goes with communication that I think is just an awesome system. It's called Nonviolent Communication. Mm-hmm. It was developed by a guy named Marshall Rosenberg. And he called it nonviolent communication because when he developed it, it was during the time of the Vietnam protests, and there was a lot of focus on nonviolence. However, the subtitle is A Language of Life. Mm-hmm. And this is about being able to step away from any kind of psychological mumbo-jumbo jargon, any of that, when you're mm-hmm. dealing with another person, and really just focus on the fact that we're all human beings, we all have feelings, and we all have needs. And it sort of takes all of the, I don't know, sometimes when people get a little bit of information about psychology, they'll do like one upsmanship with the other person and they'll start diagnosing the other person and stuff like that. And that really just goes nowhere fast. So the neat thing about the nonviolent communication is that it gives you a system for slowing down the process when you start to get into a conflict with another person or a disagreement.
Right.
So there's a system in place that mm-hmm. you can go to.
It's a little like those guidelines we talked about earlier.
Yeah, exactly. There's mm-hmm. a system. Like, go back to the system, you know, because when our a reticular activating system gets, you know, charged up, you know, and we start to get into a fight or flight type of a response, we are not going to be able to problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, first of all, you know, if you get to that situation where you're talking with another person and it's escalating, you're getting louder and no one's really listening, it's perfectly fine to take a break.
Right.
You can say, okay, we're going to take a break for at least an hour and we're going to come back to this. You don't have to work through that right in that moment.
Exactly.
In fact, if you try to, chances are that you're not going to work through it, that someone is going to end up leaving that conversation and it will not be, you're not going to get to a resolution about
exactly.
whatever the conflict
yeah,
was.
Exactly.
So it's much better to take a break. And in NVC, the focus is on, you know, we're here, we're in a relationship, and we'd like to support each other in making each other's life more wonderful. How can we do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody has needs, everybody has feelings. Sometimes we have trouble even knowing what our needs are, and we have to start with, you know, identifying what are our feelings.
Right.
And sometimes we don't know what our feelings might be. This book is great because it gives you a list of feelings.
Mm.
Sometimes we don't know how to identify our feelings. So there's the feelings are right there. Oh, I don't care. I'm opening the book. I'm going to look in there. Oh, I feel disrespected. Okay, so what do I need? My need for respect isn't being met. You know, and so it takes, these are skills. Not everybody is born with this.
I would say most people are not.
Most people are not. Most people did not come from families where you necessarily learned how to express your needs and your feelings in an organized way.
Right.
So.
And then he makes requests. Isn't that one of the final things? As you evaluate where you're coming from, you come up with a request of the other person. This is what I request from you.
Yeah, you make a request, but there's a difference between requesting and demanding.
Right.
You know, once you, the first part of the process is that you check and you say, you know, I observe that when this happens, I feel like this, but it's not the other person's responsibility that you feel that way. Because right. What normally happens when another person does a behavior is you tell yourself something about what that behavior means.
Right.
And it's in that process of telling yourself what that behavior meant that you create your own feeling experience. It's not anything to do with the other person. It is to do with your interpretation of what that other person's behavior means.
Right. I'm going to, you know, also remind anybody who is listening that has listened to some of these shows in the past. One of the shows dealt with Thich Nhat Hanh and, you know, what he had to say about exactly this. He didn't kind of use the same verbiage that, you know, the book is referring to, but it's very close because he sits with that individual and he gives them that sacred space, you know, to also, like, I see you. I see that you're suffering from this. I see that you're struggling with this. And if I'm the one that's causing that, then help me understand. And so, you know, it. I think it's a good principle to use together is
yes.
to be aware of your feelings and then to be aware that you're in a relationship with somebody and that you may have caused distress. And if you have, you know, to ask, help me understand. And maybe if the other person is understanding the nonviolent communication style, then they'll be able to say, yes, I feel this when this is happening and I need this, you know, in order to not feel this way, and I'm requesting this, and not, like you said, demanding. It's not a demand. It's a truly, this is where I am, and this is where you are, and can we cross that bridge together?
Right, and the thing is, you know, when you make a request, it's, you know, it would help. It would help me. It doesn't necessarily mean that the other person has to help you. Sometimes the other person can't help you with that.
Right.
You know, so you have to go into it with that kind of a thing.
Right.
You know, that you're speculating. Mm-hmm. You know, that I have a feeling that it would be easier for me if we could do it like this.
Right.
Maybe the person can or the person can't. Mm-hmm. But at least you've put it out there, and the other person has a better understanding of what your experience is.
I've actually heard that described as, is this a reasonable request?
Is this a reasonable mm-hmm. request? Sure, exactly. Yeah, and sometimes it is a reasonable request, you know.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes
and for,
that absolutely
for other people,
isn't.
They're just not going to be able to.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some other relationship tips and resources I wanted to share today. There's a really great, also another great system, or there's another, actually a researcher whose name is John Gottman, and he has done a love lab for over 20 years where he puts couples into the lab and actually takes diagnostic measures about their, you know, what happens with their cortisol levels, what happens with their heart rate under different circumstances. John Gottman, Gottman, and he has the Love Lab. And then also the Hendrixes. I know that we have more than one Hendrix, but this is Harville Hendrix. And this is an older book, but I really feel like this gets down to the crux of what happens a lot when we were talking actually last week about people sort of meet other people who sort of fit with them, like
uh-huh.
like a hand in glove kind of situation,
right.
where they're somehow paired together because they both have things that trigger each other's stuff in the... And they're trying to find a way to both heal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the Harville Hendrix work is, you know, kind of speaks to that. Mm-hmm. And he has a book called Getting the Love You Want. There's another book he wrote called Keeping the Love You Find. And there's a lot of exercises in these books that I think are really useful. And let's see. And there's also a video that you can find on the internet. It's called Song of Songs, Synergy.tv. If you go to it, it was a relationship documentary that goes over John Gottman. It includes John Gottman, Harville Hendricks, and it was done by a man who was interviewing his grandparents, who had been together for many, many years. And it's a really interesting documentary about the state of relationships, and it gives, you know, resources and sort of some perspective on what's happening with relationships, you know, romantic relationships primarily. And then there's another author who I find to be very interesting, who has written sort of from a Hindu perspective on the masculine and feminine energy, the blending of masculine and feminine energy. His name is David Deida, D-E-I-D-A, and he's written several books that I think that are very useful relative to understanding the blending of masculine and feminine energy.
I think all of those resources would be awesome for people to find, and I would imagine they could either get there just by Googling it, or also if they want to order the book, going to Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and those of you who have Amazon Prime, of course, you know that you can have things sent without paying any shipping, which is also a nice thing. One of the things that I also wanted to mention is what Kristen and I did when she first came to be with me this morning. And she was experiencing a little bit of stress from some stuff that was going on. And I had just received my inner balance. I don't want to call it a machine. It's a device that is very lightweight. And you actually clip it to your ear and then put it on clothing. And you have to have what's called the Inner Balance app put on your iPhone or your Android phone. But it syncs your heart and your breathing rate. And unlike a lot of things where we're not sure we're doing it right, this shows you, because there's a mandala on your phone then, and it breathes with you so that you get yourself into a rhythm of breathing. And the device will show you if you're in red, which means that you're not synced with your breathing. Your heart is moving in a direction that's not necessarily a healthy direction. And then it can go to blue. And optimally, you want it to be in green. And if you keep it in green, then you are doing what's called coherence. And coherence has your body is able to heal itself. And your heart and your breathing are working coherently together to keep you in a place of health. So it's through Heart Math Institute, and there's a wealth of information on that particular website. One of the areas of research there has to do with trees, and I think I mentioned this even maybe last week, but trees work as a community. Most people think of them as very singular, but they actually work as a community. And so if there is a tree that is struggling nutritionally, all of the trees will begin to send some of their roots over to that tree to feed it. And I think we as human beings can learn how to do that as well. We're not very good at it at the moment, but there's enough of us that are beginning to work those areas where we're trying to vibrationally feed what's around us, and that raises the overall vibration. It makes it a little bit healthier. So you can go to Heart Math Institute and actually pick up this device, or you can, if you're on my website, which is synergyconnectionradio.com, you can go under services, and when you click services, you will see Boomers Forever Young. And I actually got my device through Boomers Forever Young, so you can go there as well and pick up or at least read about the device and try to understand how it might be of benefit to you on a health level.
I enjoyed using the device. You know, mm-hmm. As a longtime meditator, it was easy for me, I think, to get where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. But it was really fun to have Lucy telling me, okay, you're in this color, you're in that color, okay, now you're back to this color. And I did a little like healing visualization with myself, releasing some of the energetic things that I was processing. And we actually saw those going out on the device. Mm-hmm. So that was really fascinating. So that the device is giving very clear feedback,
right,
in terms of what your internal thought process is and, you know, where you're going vibrationally.
Right. Kathy Bates, I was explaining this to Kristen, but she used mindfulness, which we're going to be talking about more in the future, but she used mindfulness and this kind of breathing and being aware of your body to lose 60 pounds. And she is in a very healthy place now. So I want to thank everybody again for listening to the show. It will be up on my website a little later this afternoon. If you want to send somebody to the website, it's synergyconnectionradio.com. And I want to wish you nothing but the best, and please live your best life. Thank you so much for joining us.